Hello and welcome to Misbehave, the podcast where we explore human behavior in a business context. Season 2 of Misbehave is all about uncovering behavioral patterns which create success in life and business. We're joined by highly driven, accomplished individuals to assess their behavioral patterns and dive into how behaviors have influenced their journey. In this episode of Misbehave, we talk to Penny DeVolk, a global leadership expert and advocate for closing the female leadership gap. We dive into everything from addressing the broken rung in the female leadership pipeline to the behavioral changes organizations need to foster inclusivity and success. Welcome, Penny. I think it's safe to say that you have had an impressive and varied leadership career. Can you get us started by telling us a little bit about what inspired your passion for leadership and in particular, women in leadership?
Okay, well, that's very generous of you, Laura. I guess I was always interested in leadership development, even right back to my role as a general manager of the Institute of Management in New Zealand, my own as well as others. And I really recognized quite early on that leadership is kind of a sexy topic. Everyone's kind of into it. And also, as a result, it's kind of very prone to flavor of the month. You know, that whole airport bookstore wisdom, people falling into the next bright, shiny thing. And I was suspicious of that, you know, and often I felt it was really to distract ourselves and avoid the hard stuff of all leadership, which is where professional development and personal development really intersect, which I think is about being a better human being, will make you a better leader. And that's the hard work in life. And so my interest was in how do we really make sure that the existing canon or the existing leadership orthodoxy really works for what we need in leaders, and we don't just go from one next shiny thing to another. And my interest in women's leadership development really came from a suspicion that maybe when it came to leadership, what worked for men didn't necessarily work for women across the board. Because I was learning that. Yeah, I was learning that on a personal level and thinking, hey, how come I didn't learn that at business school?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because one, we know one size doesn't fit all across the board. But when you look at that, the gender differences, and there are differences, and I'm sure we'll get into exploring that in a little bit more detail, but there are. And I think for us, we're always really passionate about looking at how do you help individuals lead better. And I think some of it does start with them looking at themselves and what they need to do as a person, and then looking at how they apply that into their leadership space. What personal experiences kind of shaped your mission to address the broken rung, I think that you describe it as, in the female leadership pipeline?
Yes, I guess, you know, the broken rung, or the fact that women are still disproportionately falling out of leadership pipelines still. I guess my personal experience went 30 years ago, there weren't that many women in management leadership, and I wanted a career. And I was drawn to leadership. I've got to be honest, I was dragged kicking and screaming sometimes into it. I had great mentors and bosses who said, you've got to throw your hat in the ring, men and women. You know, to be fair, I've only worked with, you know, a couple of men who were, I won't say that on, you know, who weren't good human beings. But I was interested in the fact that a lot of the men I was working with were actually pretty average. And a lot of the women I worked with were actually usually outstanding. And that's like a real stereotype. But anyway, my experience was, how do I become a better leader? What really do I need in my toolkit? Sometimes I felt like I was, and there were times in my career when I thought, oh, it's just getting too hard, where I thought, oh, God, I have to sell out, or I'm going to burn out, or I'm going to just walk out. And so those sort of times in my life that really made me step back and go, what is going on here? What is it in me? What is it in the environment? That is really important for me to understand how I can bring my best leadership self to my aspirations for my career and my leadership. And when we sold Penner to Adecco some years ago, that is when I was in a position to say, well, how do I want my life to look now? And how am I going to design my working life around the difference I want to make? And I was really annoyed that 30 years later, things hadn't really moved on. And yet we think it has in terms of women in leadership. And in not acknowledging that there are still some real challenges inherent and understanding what to do about it, we were actually doing a real disservice to women who aspire to management leadership roles and really degrading the bench of leaders that that we need in all of our organizations.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think, you know, you sometimes when you talk about this topic, you've got to talk about the broader themes. You know, we understand that everybody has behavioral differences. Every organization is different in terms of how they promote and their selection processes. But there are typically sets of behaviors that are different between men and women. What have you seen become some of the most common behavioral barriers potentially for those women that you see so much high potential in to become amazing leaders? But what are some of the behaviors that they have that act as blind spots for some of that growth?
Yeah, that's really interesting, Sarah. I mean, some of them, you know, because I absolutely don't believe in pink brain, blue brain, or that women are better leaders than men. You know, I think it's, or any of that, because I think that becomes very binary and very polarizing, which is very easy for us all to go into in these times. So that some of the barriers are really subtle. So it's really worth dwelling here just for a minute, if I may. Because much of it today is not about overt sexism. Those days, hopefully, are largely over. And, you know, the stuff where I was told to make the tea and women were getting their bums pinched and called girls and not being invited into important meetings, it's still tough out there in terms of that. But those overt days are over. But they can lead us to think, oh, it's done. But there is one really stubborn challenge, which is the area I work, which is really important for us to understand because it hasn't shifted. And I look at the data on this almost every day. And it's the stereotype of think leader, think male. Men take charge, women take care. And this is specific to leadership. And it's still in the minds of most men and women. And of course, think leader, think male, men take charge, women take care. Clearly outdated stereotypes. None of us are raising our sons and daughters to believe this, but they are very, very stubborn. And therefore, what this means is that women need to navigate this trade-off still between our gender expectations as women, being warm and caring and communal, and leader expectations, which are still endowed with masculinity in our minds. So women, when we become leaders, when we exercise our agency, we're actually behaving counter-stereotypically. And that's why we get pushback. And that's why what works for men in leadership doesn't always work for women. So identical behaviors being experienced and judged very differently, which is why women are called sharp-elbowed. I've never heard a man called sharp-elbowed. So identical behavior. And so you talked about behaviors and often our own socialization, you know, still the case. It's changing very slowly, but girls are sort of trained to please, to play a supporting role. And that's not what leadership constitutes. So we need to manage our own autopilots or default behaviors that might get in the way of signaling our leadership capability and our leadership ambitions. Not asking for ourselves, apologizing, not talking about our successes. You know, when we do this, we will often get pushback because it's not seen as nice in a woman. And yet if we don't do that, we can somehow diminish our ability to show up and to signal our leadership capability. So those are behaviors we need to be able to manage in ourselves and in others, because as leaders, we know good leaders take care and take charge. That's what we need to be able to do both. And men and women are equally capable of doing both. So what we need to be able to do is be able to, in these transitional times, let's hope there's only another couple of generations to go until we can normalize women in leadership, that this double bind that gets in the way of women being able to signal and to be able to step into their leadership with confidence. And that takes time. For me, it was like, in my career, often I felt I was sort of crashing around in the dark into the furniture. And when I got a better understanding, it was like turning the light on. So that's what we just need, to just turn the light on. You get to choose if you want to navigate. Not every woman has an ambition or an aspiration for leadership, but more do than say so. And that makes me sad, because there's like, oh, I'm just going to look like it's all about me, or I'm going to look boastful. That's what I'm interested in, turning the light on so we know what we're needing to navigate, and then supporting the mindset and skill set shifts in men and women so we can kind of all be released from this double bind.
I think that stereotype conversation is a really interesting one. You've probably read it, but I think for the listeners, if they haven't, The Fix by Michelle King is really interesting on that, and she highlights a lot of that thought process around what is the leadership success stereotype. And I think you're so spot on with that thought process, that, and often organizations can take that really personally and can almost say, well, we haven't deliberately created this stereotype. But I think it's an interesting reflection point for any leaders that are listening to this, is to think about, what is the success stereotype in your business of leaders? You know, do you have a boardroom that is full of white men, as an example? Because if you do, while that might not be deliberate to exclude women, unfortunately in your business the leadership success stereotype looks a certain way. So then how do we then, to your point, turn the light on to say, okay, we acknowledge this is where we are, and we know that certain industries and technical professionals and all of that sort of thing contribute to that. But how do we turn the light on and combat that? Whereas if you're looking at a success stereotype that is very, it's mixed, and there's lots of people from lots of different backgrounds, there's people who don't all look the same, who don't all have the same thought process sat around a table, maybe that light's already been switched on. So I think that analogy of that stereotype is really interesting.
Which actually leads me on, because I wanted to ask the question of, did you have any really inspirational success stereotypes in your career pathway? Like, were they people that maybe you were in an environment where you thought, I need to make a difference in here? Or did you have anybody which you aspired to because they were a woman and leading and doing a great job?
Yeah, interesting. Because, you know, role models are so important. You know, that whole, you know, if you can't see it, you can't be it. I never really had a pure one, but then I didn't wait around for it. I created composites, and I would encourage women to do that. Now, in men and women, because, you know, we put a lot of weight on women having to be this great, you know, there were some amazing women out there, but I didn't feel I could really relate to them because they were kind of formidable. You know, they looked like catwalk models, and they had 5 children, never had a nail chip, and they had fabulous husbands, and they had gorgeous lives, and they earned millions. It was like, I couldn't relate to them. And then there were some women who also, you know, and I understood it and became more compassionate around that when I saw, who sort of turned into these alpha male women that I didn't like. I didn't want to be that person. So I decided quite intentionally early on to pick out and create my own mosaic around role models. Like, oh, I really love the way he uses humor just to sort of get rid of the anxiety in the room when we're starting a meeting. I love the way she always takes us up 1,000 feet when we need to go up. I really like the way he will always go, yeah, but come on, who is going to do what by when? I love the way she walks the floor in the morning just to check in with the mood and the climate. And so I sort of created a mosaic of my own role model instead of waiting for some perfect creature. I'm probably hardwired to be contrary. So I thought, I'm never probably going to find that person. And why would I do that? But there's a lot of great leadership out there that we can model.
I totally relate to that. Yeah, I really do. And I don't think I did that consciously. I think I did it almost subconsciously because I didn't have someone sort of guiding me to do that, because I had some amazing people in my career pathway, but it was done accidentally, just taking the good pieces from people and also taking some of the stuff where I'd experienced things that weren't great and reminding myself that wasn't I wasn't going to take that piece. That was something I was going to avoid and leave at the door, as it were. But I think that's so interesting for people to think about, like, what are they doing subconscious, on a subconscious basis, really consciously, intentionally think, what are they wanting to create? And I think just taking that moment to reflect on what kind of leader you want to be is absolutely critical.
Yeah, I love that, Laura. And I agree. A lot of my learning early in my leadership career was, oh, I must remember never to do that. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how that feels. Yeah. But I think it's a bit like parenting. Suddenly you find yourself doing it and thinking, oh, how did I, suddenly my mother's words come out of my mouth.
The thing that I hated when I was a child, I'm now doing to my child as well.
Who am I? Yeah. So it's about reminding ourselves that of who, but really we know powerful learning is going towards something positive, not going away from something negative. And so the more we can create that picture. And also that means that we've got live people who we can see. It doesn't have to be something that's just out there that's not real. We can find, and it helps us really find the positives in people's leadership, impact and behavior. And we are often very inclined to just default to the things, be critical and default to the things that they do badly.
I'm interested to know a little bit how you balance your Women in Leadership program that you do, obviously for the participants, but then how you make sure that that drives change in the wider business. Because we often see that where people might come onto a program and they have such transformational change themselves, but then how do you then work to drive some of the change that's potentially needed in their wider organization?
Yeah, I'm really lucky to be in a position to work with organizations who are doing both and work often with the senior execs. So it's not never positioned as kind of remedial, the girls need fixing, nor is it like, oh, let's just whip this up into a frenzy of, you know, the girls getting mad and the boys feeling bad. That's not helpful either in terms of leadership. So there's most organizations I'm working with are working really hard on system changes, making sure that they pull bias out of their promotion, progression, potential, their recruitment. And also in terms of the broader leadership development, a lot of the work I do is under the guise of, sounds deceptive, maybe it is, of mentoring. And what do we need to be aware of when some of your own autopilots come in? Because we know a lot of unconscious bias training has not worked well. It is triggered defensiveness or people thinking, oh, well, that's just me. So it's getting really good conversations going. And for women themselves to be able to go, I can engage in a conversation here that is evidence-based, that is not about creating threat or coming from a place of being a victim of a system. Because we know if you have a mindset of being a victim of a system, it absolutely will shut our learning down. And so in terms of development, it's a really unhealthy place to stay for either men or women or organizations. And also, it's not true. There isn't some big, you know, dark evil plot keeping women out of boardrooms. These things are unconscious. They are biases that we need to own and we need to manage. Because in your conversation, you know, Laura, about stereotypes, even then, we need to move away from the blame of that. Stereotypes are just doing what our brains have been designed to do. We only have so much processing power, you know, and so we need to save energy. And then we have our confirmation bias. So we think that's going to keep us safe. That's going to work. It's helped me categorize and make sense of the world. And then I start, you know, making sense of the world, and our confirmation bias just makes sure that those get. So that's why they're so stubborn. But, you know, we don't have to be victims of our evolutionary programming. We can shift that. But it's really important that we do that through having intelligent conversations, because we know when we feel threatened, people's defenses go up. So it's not about blaming, but engaging in conversations and doing some small things that work.
Amazing. Yeah. And we can see from your profile that driving change is important to you, making a difference, you know, driving those improvements in whichever way you can is a key driver for you. So that's really interesting to hear you talk about. It's actually taking the action to drive the change, yeah? But doing it in a way where people can then take ownership post your departure and be able to roll that through.
If you're interested in learning more about your own management behaviours and the behaviours of your team, click the link in the show notes to access a 14-day free trial of Perform.
You kind of specialise in evidence-based leadership development. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I guess the reason I'm interested in data. I'm interested in understanding how things are going and in tracking that, because we make a lot of huge assumptions all the time. And so we need to sort of scrub that. And when we've talked about, you know, evidence-based leadership, well, the facts even still about, is this leaky leadership pipeline a real thing? Is it something that's done? And, you know, we know McKinsey's research, women in the workplace this year, again, 52% of those at entry level are men, 48% women, C-suite, 71% men, 28% women. So we've really got to understand that. And rather than, you know, applying maybe statistics at you, but here is some of the data that is still current and still very real. And it feeds through. It's how this double bind, this tension, these competing expectations women need to manage as we become more senior between our likability and our competence. And it's not a trade-off that men need to make. While think leader, think male, men take charge, women take care is still in the minds of most people. So we look at some of it. Great performance doesn't result in high potential ratings for women. Confident women are seen as the same leadership material men are. Women's expertise is challenged more than men. Women are penalized for negotiating for themselves. They're interrupted more. Even mentors can see sponsoring women as risky. We know as women, we pay a modesty penalty if we talk about our achievements. Kind of sadly, successful women aren't liked as much as successful men. And, you know, the reality is still that men are assumed to be competent until proven otherwise. And it's not the case for women. So just that data alone, again, it happens because leadership is still endowed with masculinity in our minds. So women leaders are behaving counter stereotypically. That's why we get pushback. It's a dilemma specific to female managers and leaders. But just imagine that data alone, the impact it will have on a woman's career and her leadership ambition.
And I think that evidence-based approach is one that often people forget about. Not obviously you're talking about it in specificity to women in leadership, but you know, you're very much talking our language. It's one of the reasons why we now don't do any leadership or management development without understanding the behaviors underneath it. It's why we built our tool, because we're very much of the opinion that you can teach a topic, but if there's no evidence behind it to suggest that the managers or leaders in your organization struggle with that, i.e., and for us, the behavioral data tells us one way or another. For you, a lot of those research statistics tell you, or some of the things that maybe the businesses are seeing. If you're then not putting in place a leadership initiative that then tackles something that's data-driven and evidence-backed, you're never going to see the output at the other end. And I think that's a really nice lesson, whether organizations are looking at women in leadership or whether they're looking at their general leadership and management pipeline, making sure that anything that they're doing has some evidence behind it and actually has some data that backs up the reason for doing it, and then something that they can measure so that they can actually see some quantifiable ROI and improvements that come off the back of the development initiative.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I love that, because it's about using data to inform, and then the so what? What are we going to do about that? As opposed to using data to, you know, bash people up, or so people will, you know, build their awareness so that will change their, oh, okay, I get that. I get some insight. And then to be able to help people, well, so what? I might have had a mindset shift, but where does my skill set now need to go? And, you know, that's really powerful. And that, as you say, is the power of data, good data.
I'm interested to delve into, because you talk about leadership and management capability being a competitive advantage in a business. And I just want to talk about that for a minute, because I think one of our pet peeves, you could maybe call it, is when people say, oh, well, management development or leadership development, it's like this nice to have, you know, if we've got a bit of extra budget, then we'll spend it there. And I'm really interested in your take on actually it being seen as a competitive advantage in a business and therefore something to be prioritized.
Yeah. And I mean, I probably would say this because it's where I work, but and it's something that I'm so passionate about. But I know it. I've seen it all through my career. Leadership creates culture. It drives performance and success. It creates followership. If you have better leadership team than your competitors, this will flow through and it'll mean you have higher performing teams delivering better value. You will have better retention. You'll attract better talent. It creates the desire in people to give that discretionary energy. Has everyone focused on a common goal and committed to delivering on it? That is a huge source of competitive advantage. And you just can't bottle that and pop it into an organization. So if you are not developing that capability in your organization and not investing in that and doing it with intention, you are leaving a huge amount of value on the table. And actually, it's not just value you're leaving on the table, because as we've all seen, if you're not doing that and your leadership is poor, you will be creating an accretion of value that we just know the damage that bad leaders can do to all of those things, to performance, to success, to reputations, to attraction and retention. So it compounds hugely. So I believe the quality of your leadership is a huge source of competitive advantage. And that's one of the reasons I'm so interested in women's leadership development. Again, not that they're any better or worse, but that let's just get all of the leadership capability we have at the table.
Yeah, we use our profile to provide that kind of insight. But when you're making those, just going back to that assumption piece that you were talking about earlier, it's really hard not to make general assumptions and judgments on people. And to be a really good leader, for me, a big piece of that is around leaving the judgment at the door. And if you can use data to help give you more accurate insight, you've got that to work with. But also to take the time to get to know the people that you work with. Really interesting looking at your profile, that you've actually got a number of the behavioral strengths that are more balanced. So they're not really, really extreme, which means that you will be able to flex easily. Your strength is being able to flex up and down depending on the context. So for example, you are more balanced on like the where you like to work, how you work more productively. And that will just depend on the kind of work that you're doing, for example. But in the nature of your work, being able to flex means that when you go into different environments, you will be able to almost, depending on the person that you're working with, flex without it causing you too much effort. And that's a real strength. Sometimes people say to us, well, if I'm in the middle, does that mean I haven't got a strength? And we're saying, no, if you're in the middle, it means that your blind spots will be less extreme, but it also gives you lots of flexibility to work with different types of people, which is actually an amazing leadership quality, right? If you can lead everybody rather than just being able to lead the people that are similar to you, that gives you way more depth to the impact that you can make. I'm really interested to know a little bit about the leadership behavior that you think most organizations maybe underestimate.
Well, maybe on that theme is that, you know, we can't really afford to be one trick ponies. You know, we have to be able to, our leadership skill is assess the situation and then deploy a repertoire of skills, as opposed to just, oh, well, I'm really good at that. So I'm the strategic person. We just don't have that ability. We've got to be able to flex. But I think the real underestimation is just joy, humor, giving people relaxed, non-task time to your people. Don't underestimate what a gift that is to culture, to people's mood, and just to people feeling engaged, because the pace and intensity of our working lives are so intense. It's very easy for us to fall from another meeting, fall into another meeting, or go, oh, we need a social session. Just some humor and giving relaxed time to our people where task is not the priority.
Hey, and it's difficult to create, but you know, I think during this kind of this world where it is so fast paced, it's difficult to create that space. I know we sometimes struggle with it, even with each other, like taking the moment where it doesn't have to be a serious conversation. I am very guilty of using humor a lot, and sometimes I have to be careful with that. But I do think, as when you were describing it earlier, I was like, yes, that's actually exactly how I like to use it, where you can read the room and think, we need to lift this up, we need to make people feel more relaxed. And it does create sort of an energy that then is a better starting place, for sure. Yeah.
So a couple of, we call them the rapid fire questions, Penny, for you. First one, what do you think is the biggest misconception about women's leadership development?
Oh, that it's remedial, that it's about fixing the women who are somehow lacking, and that leadership development just for women is not inclusive. Those are huge misconceptions that are doing a great disservice to women. But I guess also that the women themselves need to feel that they have to become inauthentic or contort themselves to a system that's not made for them to be successful. No, all of those are wrong.
Yeah. A piece of advice for women aspiring to senior leadership roles?
Well, other than just go for it. Your work won't speak for itself. So just working harder and harder will just make you exhausted. So stopping and thinking, what am I working on? Does this need to change? And I know that sounds broad, but just saying, if I've got a mindset that my work will speak for itself, there are other things going on here in terms of my leadership progression. And then learn to let go of your perfectionism. I know it feels like a legitimate career strategy when we're being scrutinized all the time and we feel it gives us confidence, but perfectionism is not your friend.
I'm going to take that one. I'm taking that piece of advice, Penny, and taking it into the rest of my work week. And finally, I love this one. What one workplace behavior do you think needs to disappear forever?
Oh, that's big. I only get one.
We might let you have two, if you've got a top two.
All right. Well, maybe assuming the worst in one another. Assuming bad intentions is, if we could get rid of that default and the defensiveness that it triggers, because it stops us having intelligent conversations, it stops all the learning we need and taking responsibility for our own defensiveness and what we can do to, you know, what we do to ignite it in others. So instead of getting good at that, you know, we get good at intelligent, non-blaming conversations everyone can engage in. So get curious before you get furious.
I love all these little phrases. I feel like we need to put some of them up on the wall.
We could have like a meme. Penny's meme of the day.
Yeah. I think it's brilliant. But that intention piece, one of my favourite questions when we're talking about difficult conversations is, what could the person's best intention have been? And I think when you can get into that intention mind space, just like it diffuses all of the emotion around it. And even if you have to tell yourself a little lie because you don't believe that was their intention necessarily.
It changes the channel for you. So you can be open to possibilities as opposed to just get your fists up. Mm.
So just to end, what is 2025 for you? Talk to us a little bit about what you're seeing coming for workplaces, for the leadership environment. What are you focused on for the next year?
I really love the work I do as a coach and educator. And again, none of it's remedial. All these are high-performing men and women who want to be even better. So I intend to be in support of that. I've noticed some diversity fatigue out there. And, you know, we all know how those pendulums swing. So I think we need to be very careful about that. I've also noticed that people thinking that, as you say, that leadership development just for women is not inclusive. Again, really, we need to get under the skin of that and make sure that we are not throwing babies out with the bathwater, but that we are bringing a wise self to these challenges that are ongoing. And building, for me, I really want to build organizations' ability to bring, as I said, all of their leadership potential and capability to the table, because, hey, the world really needs it. And I want women to be living their leadership purpose powerfully and with integrity and energy, because I know that unless we do that, we can't be the role models for the women coming behind us. What I know will accelerate women's leadership progression is more women in leadership. That will break the stereotype. The more we can normalize women in leadership and being in leadership roles, the sooner this default to male bias will change, and the sooner we'll all be released from this double bind. So that's my job now.
What an amazing way to end. Well, thank you so much for spending time with us. We really loved having you with us.
I have loved being with you both. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Penny.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
So let's wrap up with some takeaways from Penny's episode. The first one being having a little look at the success stereotypes that are apparent in your business. So looking at who in your organization is successful and whether there then is a general stereotype there that you might need to challenge. The second was this thought process that you don't need to have an individual as a role model, but that you actually can create your own mosaic. So thinking about the types of behaviors, the types of characteristics that you really respect in leaders all around you and how you can create your own combined example of that. And lastly, we talked about evidence-based leadership. And really the takeaway here is figuring out a way to get data in your organization that enables you to avoid assumptions about what people need and then be able to create solutions off the back of that evidence and data versus just creating broad brush approaches.
Thank you for listening to Misbehave. Follow us so you don't miss out on other episodes.